Hey, so this is Lieutenant Colonel Ken Hoffman. I'm the Director of Public Affairs for Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency, stationed out here in Hawaii.
Okay.
And Sergeant Robinson is stationed at Camp Pendleton in California. And just to explain, we're an agency of roughly 700 people. And when we go on our missions, we do have organic military personnel that run our teams, as well as civilians. But we also, because we can't do this, it's a global mission, so we do have to bring in augments. And so Sergeant Robinson came in as an augment on one of our teams. And I'll let him go ahead and talk to you and tell you about his experience.
Okay.
I'm just here to give you the big picture information.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. You there, Lucas?
I am, yes.
Okay. Well, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us here today.
Yeah, good to talk to you, too.
Yeah. So first things first, just want to start out with just a little personal background information. So you're from Glendive, obviously. Born and raised here?
I moved, when I was in second grade, so not sure what year that was, maybe 2002.
Okay, so you moved here in second grade?
Yes.
Okay. And what year did you graduate from DCHS?
2011.
Okay. And what are your parents' names?
Frank Robinson and Wendy Robinson.
What do they do here in town?
Well, actually, they both moved, but Frank Robinson, yeah, he was a cop for quite a while in town there.
Okay.
And my mother's a nurse.
All right. Now, after DCHS, did you go to college at all, or did you go straight into the service?
I went straight into the Marine Corps. Month after I graduated.
Okay. And what prompted you to want to become a Marine?
Well, kind of ran in the family. So my father was in the Marine Corps for 30 years. Not Frank. Frank is my stepfather.
Okay.
So my dad was in the Marine Corps for 30 years. My mother was in the Marine Corps. Aunts, uncles, a lot of family was in the Marine Corps. So it's kind of just a family background.
Family tradition.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. That means you've been in the service now for 8 years?
Yep, 8 and a half, yeah.
All right. Can you tell me just a little bit about your service experience leading up to the trip to Vietnam? Just kind of brief overview of where you've been, what you've been doing, to the degree you can talk about it.
Okay, yeah. So, I'm an EOD tech, explosive ordnance disposal technician, stationed with the 1st EOD company here in Camp Pendleton. I got here in March 2017, and then I deployed to Australia for 6 months in 2017, 2018. I was there for 6 months working alongside the Australian Army. And then came back, signed back to a platoon, and then volunteered to go on the mission at BPAA.
What about before that, any deployments overseas?
No, before that I was my job was security forces. I was stationed in Kings Bay, Georgia, and it was a non-deployable unit. So there I was with the RTT, Recapture Tactics Team, and we were just in charge of the safeguarding of the nuclear weapons facility. So it was a non-deployable unit.
Okay. Yeah, and I know Kings Bay is a submarine base.
That's correct.
All right. So here's a question for you. Explosive ordnance technician. A lot of people would say, why in the world would you want to get into doing that? What drew you to that line of work?
Yeah, I think we just get to do a lot. So it's a different thing every day. You know, one day we could be working on conventional ordnance. The next day we're doing what we call a nerding, which is where we're taking a piece of ordnance, you know, a real piece of ordnance, taking it completely apart, taking all the explosive hazards out and then putting it back together for training aids. Another day we could be doing counter ID training. Another day is chemical or nuclear or radiological training. So it's just something new every day. You're constantly training something different. Also, it's a volunteer only job. So that means everybody who's in this job wanted to be in this job. So the workplace environment is great because everybody wants to be at work. Everybody enjoys being at work. You know, so it's just a good workplace environment.
Okay. And so you volunteered to go on this mission to Vietnam. How did you, were you approached about it, or did you just find out about it and decided you wanted to go with them?
So that mission comes down, it gets tested out, and then when it makes it to our company level, DOD company level where I'm stationed at, then they'll send out these different platoons, ask for volunteers, and then that's when it came to me. And I was able to, luckily I was able to volunteer and got chosen to go.
What made you want to volunteer for this type of mission?
I mean, it's just it's a great mission. I mean, you know, I've had family members who, like I said, were in the Marines who actually went to Vietnam. Luckily, they came back, so to be able to go over there and, you know, help try and locate some of these military members who didn't make it back. It's pretty awesome. It's a very humbling experience.
All right. And so this might be a message or a question for both you and Lieutenant Colonel Hoffman. In the course of doing this kind of this search, why specifically do you need an explosive ordnance technician when you're doing this kind of work?
Well, Vietnam with, I mean, the war and everything, there's ordnance dropped everywhere all throughout. And every piece of ordnance is not accounted for. So you have somebody like myself, an EOD tech, who goes along to be able to, before any operations start, sweep the area, clear the area, make sure there's no ordnance on the ground, because the last thing we want is to start digging, and then there's actually ordnance there, and then have a mishap. So that's
okay.
There.
So you're there to prevent accidents.
That's right. Mitigation of any explosive hazard.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself, and I'll just say that, you know, this, we have a global mission, and we're searching for Americans on past conflict battlefields. So virtually everywhere we go, there's a possibility of coming across unexploded ordnance. So EOD technicians are a part of every team.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what's your first name?
My first name is Jason.
Okay, Jason. Yeah, would you like to know the typical makeup of our teams, our recovery
teams? Yeah, that'd
teams?
Be great.
Okay, so here in Hawaii, we have two labs. We have a lab in Hawaii. We have a lab in Nebraska at Office Air Force Base. So any remains that we find in the European theater are sent to the lab in Offutt for forensic analysis. Anything we find in the Indo-Pacific theater are sent to our forensic lab in Hawaii. What we have here in Hawaii is the largest forensic skeletal lab in the world. And so when those remains are sent here, they do the forensic analysis. They're looking for possible dental records. They do what's called chest radiograph analysis. So if there's enough of a rib cage to reach back to old X-rays from the Korean War and World War II, sometimes
right.
We're able to use that to help in the identification. We have an odontologist on staff who does the dental examinations. But we also we extract DNA from these remains. And so we don't do the DNA testing and analysis here in the lab in Hawaii or at Offutt. We'll take sections of bone and or teeth, and we'll send them to the Armed Forces Medical Examiner System, DOD Identification Laboratory at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, and they do the DNA testing and analysis to help us identify. So we have anthropologists, we have forensic anthropologists on staff, we have forensic archaeologists. And so when we get to a site, they are the ones who kind of lead the excavation effort on site. But then we also have military members organic to DPAA, and those folks are communication experts. We have medics, we have like Sergeant Robinson, we have explosive ordnance disposal technicians. We do underwater missions, so we have divers. A lot of these crash sites that we go to on land are on the side of a mountain in the case of aircraft going down. And so we also have mountaineers that go on these missions. We have linguists, we have archivists, we have historians. Everything we do is really based on history. So when we go out to a site, there's been a lot of research that went into that mission. So we have historians that are constantly searching archives, our own archives, searching the archives of the country of the loss. And what they do is they try to pinpoint a location because it takes a lot of time and money to plan these missions. And we want to make sure that when we go to a site that we're going to find something. So You have a lot of research that goes into the mission, and even before the recovery team goes out, so Sergeant Robinson was part of a recovery team, before that happens, we send an investigation team to the area. And they'll go to a site where we believe there may have been whether it was an aircraft that went down or there was a battle there. An investigation team goes out. Investigation teams are smaller. So an investigation team is roughly six to eight people. And they'll canvas an area. Okay. They'll do interviews. They'll be looking for sometimes, in some cases, like for the Vietnam War and the Korean War, even World War II in Europe, looking for possible witnesses that can corroborate what we believe might be in that area. And then if they gather enough evidence and they believe that there's, you know, the research correlates to that site, they'll come back and they'll recommend for a recovery team to go out. And that's what happened in this case, where the investigation team found enough evidence to send a team out there. And that's when the excavation begins.
Speaking of which, can I ask you guys, were you able to recover anything on this trip, or can you talk about that at all?
On this site, I don't, and Sergeant Robinson, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe we recovered any human remains on this site.
Yeah, that's correct. No human remains were found on this site.
So, but enough evidence was found to keep the site open, so we won't close that site. Hey Sergeant Robinson, you guys were out there for what, about 45 days?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, Jason, missions last anywhere from 45 to 60 days. A recovery team is made up of how big was your team, Sergeant Robinson? Remember how many people?
We had 18 personnel total.
Okay, so 18 personnel, and then we'll have local nationals that are assigned to our teams, because we work very closely with the host nation, especially in Vietnam. We have a very close relationship with them. Just in December of 2018, we commemorated 30 years of sustained operations with Vietnam in conducting this mission in their country, and they're very, very helpful. And they augment our teams with their own military personnel, and then they also assign contractors made up of host nation personnel that assist us in the excavation. So what would you say the makeup of the team, Sergeant Robinson, was with the local nationals assisting?
I believe we had around 50 local workers helping us.
Yeah, so they are a huge help to us. So anyway, typical makeup of recovery team is like anywhere from 20 to even sometimes up to 30 people, and then we have the host nation augmentation. Like I said, recovery teams are like 6 to 10 people. I mean, investigation teams are about 6. They're smaller.
Right. Smaller, yeah. Right. All right. From where Lan Son province is in Vietnam, I assume this was a missing USAF service member?
That is correct. It was actually an aircraft loss. It was an Air Force fighter jet, but I can't go into more detail than that.
Right. And he said the site is remaining open. So does that mean you guys did find some wreckage or something like that to keep it going?
Yeah, Sergeant Robinson, why don't you tell him about some of the material evidence you found on site.
Okay. So we did find some parts of life support equipment. So it was actually part of that service member's parachute that we were able to discover.
So, Jason, that means we'll keep – there's enough there to keep that site open, and we will eventually
back. If you found Barbara's parachute, that means he made it to the ground, probably.
Right. And there's, I mean, we've had cases in the past where we've sent a team out to a site and they were able to find, you know, pieces of aircraft wreckage and or, you know, shreds of uniform or, like Sergeant Robinson said, parachute. And so we keep the site open and we've gone back and we've actually found individuals and I've identified those individuals.
Okay. All right. Lucas, just kind of overall, what was your kind of first, when you first got to Vietnam, what was kind of your initial reaction, thoughts, feelings of being in that place?
I mean, it was awesome. It was very, what's that?
I was just going to add, especially since you said you had family members who actually served there.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it was awesome to see, I mean, just the history behind everything we did. We were able to see a little bit of some of the historical areas, and then, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It was really awesome to see just everything. It's a huge difference, obviously, between Vietnam and America. So to kind of see a difference in culture is great, and yeah, just the historical aspect of everything is awesome.
All right. You know, not having, my academic training is in history, so this is all very interesting to me. But how you know, you said the Vietnamese are very helpful. How, when you get there and you're interacting with them, how do they relate to Americans, you know, considering that past history? What is that relationship actually like?
I mean, from my experiences, it's a great relationship. They're all very polite, very helpful. Everyone's like, they're all just as eager, if not, I mean, they're just as eager to help find remains as we are. And they're very hard workers. You know, they're a lot of help.
And so, Jason, I just want to also let you know that the just real quick on that, the Vietnam War is still our agency's number one operational priority. So we are there throughout the year, sending teams in there. And just to give you a little background, the pace and scope of our operations there have increased significantly over the years. And so we conduct our joint field activities with the government of Vietnam, but also in Laos and Cambodia.
Right.
Recover the remains of missing Americans. And so throughout these countries, our teams continue to investigate crash and burial sites and work with the host nations very closely, as well as the local nationals, to accomplish this mission. And just do you want a little bit of history on our Vietnam War operation? I can let get what you need from Sergeant Robinson. That's the most important.
Well, I mean, you go ahead. I mean, when did DPAA start their operations in Vietnam? How soon or long after the war did it begin?
The first joint field recovery was conducted in 1985. And then sustained operations really began in 1988.
Been at it for a while then.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Colonel Hoffman, do we have a current kind of up-to-date tally of how many service members are still missing from Vietnam?
Yeah, let me just pull up my data here real quick, and I'll give you. So total still unaccounted for from the Vietnam War is 1,587.
In other words, you got a good bit more work to do.
We do.
All right. Lucas, when you got to Vietnam, was there anything on this trip, was there anything you learned about Vietnam that you didn't know going in or that maybe surprised you a little bit?
I mean, yeah, the whole experience was kind of was really new to me. I didn't really know too much about the culture when I before I even went there. So, or anything specific? Let's see. Yeah, no, I'm not too sure about that one. Sorry.
No, it's okay. So let me put it this way. Was there anything you came away really appreciating about Vietnamese culture or the way they do things?
I mean, one thing is just how hard they work. I mean, you ask them if they're able to do something that, one, they never say no. They always say, like, yeah, we can do that. They always have a can-do attitude. And then, man, they work and work until it's time to go home. Yeah, you know, very hard worker.
All right. Did you have to dispose of any unexploded ordnance while you were on the trip?
No, I did not.
Okay. When you returned to the States from that trip, what was kind of your kind of overall kind of takeaway or feeling about it?
I mean, I suppose one big thing is just, I guess, it's such a different culture, so a lot of the things that we kind of take for granted here, you know, they don't have over in Vietnam, so it kind of put a new perspective on a lot of things that we kind of take for granted. You know, a lot of, I don't know, things that we find commonplace are not common in Vietnam.
How about the search operation itself?
The search operation?
Yeah, like, you know, what was kind of your, you know, coming away from that, what was kind of your feelings about how that went and everything?
I thought it went great. I mean, I was just glad that we could find some life support equipment. That just means we're one step closer to finding a missing service member.
All right. And I assume if the opportunity arises, would you be interested in doing this again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I had a great time. And it was a great time, and it was a great work experience for me professionally as well.
All right. There's a couple more housekeeping questions here, and I'll let you guys get back to what you're doing. What's your specific unit, Lucas?
So my specific unit is 7th Engineer Support Battalion, and then 1st Explosive Ordnance Disposal Company.
All right. Anything you want to tell the people back in Glendive?
No. No, that's all right.
Well, I guess since your parents moved away, you probably don't have a reason to come back here anymore, do you?
I mean, I still have, all my friends and some other family there.
All right. Lieutenant Colonel Hoffman, anything else you want to add about the mission?
I can you want me to send you some information? And
I'll send you our
mission and some stats and
That'd be great, actually.
This way you have the background information, and then if you have any follow-up questions, I'm happy to get back on the phone with you or if you want to shoot me an email.
Okay. That'd be perfect.
Anything else that you need for the story, I'm happy to do that.
Okay.
What's your email?
Best one to reach me at is DCEDC.
Okay.
At midrivers.com.
So that's Delta Charlie, Echo Delta Charlie?
Echo Delta Charlie, yep.
At midrivers.com.
That's it.
All right. I'm going to shoot you some information. And,
okay.
Don't hesitate to give me a call back or shoot me an email.
All right. Thanks, sir.
Hey, Jason, when do you think you'll publish this?
My editor wants it for the weekend paper, so that'll be this coming Sunday.
Okay. And is this also something that you'll put online or?
Yep. It'll be up on our website, though you do have to have a subscription to view that online. But what I can do, once we get it done, I can get a PDF copy of it and send it to you guys so you guys can have it.
That'd be outstanding because I'd love to share that with my leadership here. They always appreciate these kind of stories, and we do appreciate your time and interest in doing it.
Well, we're happy to do it. So. Cool story. I'm glad to see a guy from Glendive doing this kind of work. It's really neat.
Absolutely.
And hey,
Jason, thanks so much for your time today.